do a lecture on how you would do full control on a spin system where you are allowed to pulse on only one spin. So we're going to look at this in the NV centers in Diamond. So I'll just start by describing the full Hamiltonian. So remember, we have these six electrons here, which form an effective spin one. And then they're in this tetrahedron lattice of carbon. And we have a nitrogen 14 here, which is also spin one. And then, so if our diamond is made out of natural abundance carbon, then 99% of the carbon will be carbonless, will be carbon 12, which is spin zero. And 1% of the carbon will be carbon 13, which is spin one half. So you just sort of get a random placement of carbon 13s throughout your lattice. So your spin system looks like this. You have one spin one electron. You have one spin one 14 nitrogen, and then you have M spin one half carbon 13s. This is Q-trit, Q-trit, and qubits. And so your dimension of your Hilbert space is going to be 3 squared times 2 to the m, right, for all these spins. So now we can write down a Hamiltonian for the system. So the total Hamiltonian is going to look like a piece on just the electron, plus a piece on just the nitrogen, plus a piece on just each of the carbons, right? And then we're going to start getting interaction terms. So we'll get an interaction between the electron, the nitrogen, an interaction between each of the electrons and the carbon spins. We're going to get an interaction between all pairs of carbon spins. We're going to get an interaction between the nitrogen spin and each of the carbon spins. And then finally, we're going to have a control piece. So I'll also label here. So we'll set up our coordinate system like this. And we'll put a big, a small static magnetic field in some orientation that we can choose. And then we'll also be able to control an oscillating small magnetic field in the x direction. So this will be going at a frequency of something close to the zero field splitting that we'll see here. So we can just start writing down what these Hamiltonians are. So for the electron, we get the zero field splitting that we saw yesterday. We'll get a Zeeman piece due to the static field. And it'll come in as the gyromagnetic ratio of an electron. That's it for that. For the nitrogen, we'll also get a Zeeman term. And we'll get a quadrupolar piece. So that comes in as the Z operator squared times some frequency. Each of the carbons will see the Zeeman field too. So we'll get So I'm using the spin operators. Thanks for asking. So S will be SX, SY, SZ. And these are the spin 1 ones. So SX is 1 over root 2, 1, 1, 1, 1. That SY has the negative I's on the top and I's on the bottom. And SZ looks like that. And that's why when you have a squared term, it's not just the identity. Because when you square the SZ, you get 1, 0, 1. And similarly, I sub alpha is going to be the alpha poly operator over 2. Yeah. We just put this 2 here because we keep writing factors of 2, right? In our like when we're doing this. So the I spin operator just lets you move that factor of 2 into there. So those are all of these terms. H control we've seen before. So it's come in the x direction. It's going to be oscillating at this frequency. We're allowed to set a phase here. And this can be a function of time if you want it to be. And you're allowed to set this amplitude. By turning up your amp or whatever, and you can set that. And this factor of 2 is going to drop out in our rotating wave approximation like before. So now we can start looking at interaction pieces. So maybe I'll start with HM M prime. So you'll have carbons in random places. So you say you'll have one here and one over here. They're going to see a dipole field. Each one is going to see the other one's dipole field, so you'll get a dipole interaction between them. And so this will look like, I mean, there'll be a bunch of so it'll drop off as the distance between them cubed. And it will go as the multiplication of the gyromagnetic ratios. And then look like this. So this is the unit vector that points along their bond. Not their bond, but the angle that joins them. And now we get to, so we've done those two. This one is going to look the same, except that you will have an N here. And so now we can talk about these ones. So this effective electron is not very well localized in space. It's going to have a finite wave function that spreads out for a few lattice sites. There's going to be a probability density function of where the electron actually is. And so when we calculate the interaction between this effective electron and a given nucleus, we have to take into account this probability distribution. And we also have to take into account the Fermi contact piece that will come as a result of this wave function overlapping with the nucleus. So we're going to get for example, we'll do an integral so R is the potential position of the electron and Rm is the position of the nucleus. So we'll do a position an integral over all positions of the electron. We'll multiply it by the probability that the electron is at position R, and then we'll have that same dipolar term there. So r prime hat dot s, r prime hat dot m, take away that's one piece, and then we'll also have a Fermi contact piece. That looks like this. So in practice, this is very difficult to compute. Usually, if you wanted to actually compute this, you would do a huge numerical simulation. And even then, if you would compare that result to a measurement, you'd be off by 5 or 10%. So in practice, you just do this. So you say, well, this is just going to look like a tensor. So I'm going to have S on one side, some tensor in the middle, and IM on the other side. So I can describe this entire interaction by nine terms. So A will be AXX, AXY. Like that. And so each carbon here will see a different hyperfine interaction. So there will be different numbers in this tensor. And the nitrogen will also see a tensor. And you can use, for example, with the nitrogen, since it's axially symmetric with the electron, and you know that the wave function will be symmetric, you can reason that this tensor needs to be diagonal, for example. So you can do certain things like that. So now that I've written out the full complexity, I'm going to take a step back and look at simple pieces of it so that we can actually understand bits and pieces of it. So I kind of wanted that board to go up. Pardon? I just didn't want to hide this board. Maybe I will just go over there. So let's pretend we don't have any nuclear spins, right? And let's write down the Hamiltonian. So we're going to get the zero field splitting, so it's squared plus now this term is going to be about 3 gigahertz. This term, depending on the strength of our field, is going to be tens of megahertz. And this term is hard to make more than about 20 megahertz, depending on what you do. So this is by far the biggest energy contribution. And whenever you see a Hamiltonian with where there's a big energy term and then an oscillating term at that frequency, your immediate instinct should be to go to a rotating frame. Right, so this should be the first thing that you do when you see the situation. And the rotating frame that you almost always want to go into is you want to take the operator of the biggest term and move it at a frequency of the oscillation. So we're going to define our interaction frame by omega t sz squared. And then our interaction operator is e to the I t h rho. And now, in this frame, our effective Hamiltonian, which will be time-dependent, is given by U H U. And we saw this derivation of the effective Hamiltonian a few lectures ago. And what's going to happen? Well, this U is going to commute with this term. And it's also going to commute with H rotation. Oops. So we're going to get this term. It's going to commute with the z part of this term. So we'll get gamma e b z s z. But it's not going to commute with the x and y components of this term. So we're going to actually have to sandwich u by the x and y parts. So we'll see gamma e bx. So this looks sort of like a rotation about the z-axis. So we're going to have a cosine of omega tt sx. And then the x is going to get turned into a y. So we're going to get a sine of omega tt sy prime. And this prime is here because we're not actually rotating by sz, we're rotating by sz squared, and so our commutation relations get a bit messed up. So sy prime is the anti-commutator of sy and sz. And similarly, we'll get a term for by. And for example, this is just, I'll write this one, 1 over root 2, negative I, and this I turns into a positive I. So you get this. And then finally, this is the wrong direction. When we sandwich this term by the u's, you break up this part into a rotating and counter-rotating piece, and you'll end up with, very similar to before, omega 1 cos phi sx plus sine phi sy prime plus a piece rotating at 2 omega t. And so the rotating wave approximation says to drop this term. So that's what we'll do. But notice now that we still have time dependence in our Hamiltonian, which we would like to get rid of at the moment, just to make looking at the dynamics simpler. So what we notice is that H effective is periodic. Right. And this period is much shorter than any of the dynamics going on in the system. So omega t will be roughly equal to z of s. So this is so this interaction will be very slow. This is tens of megahertz. So that interaction will take like tens or hundreds of nanoseconds. Similar, these are small terms. This is a small term. And so this, which is like a third of a nanosecond, is a dynamic which is much slower than all the rest. So it's fair in this case to average over these. And so we define I'll just leave it here. That's okay. We define the average Hamiltonian. It's 1 over t. dt. And what we'll get is the So all four of these terms will average to zero in this integral. So let's look at the matrix form of this. So it'll be 3 by 3, and up here we'll have a T. Then in the middle we'll have nothing. Down here we'll have this. Zero here and here, and let's just take phi equals zero. So remember, we have the choice to choose omega t. So let's now choose it to be. Let's say omega ZFS plus gamma E BZ. And then this term will drop out. I'll get 2 gamma E BZ. So we'll get a matrix that looks like this. And one way to sort of get intuition about what's going on here is we can imagine that we have 2 qubit subspaces that are overlapping. So we have 1 qubit down here, 1 qubit Hamiltonian down here, and another qubit Hamiltonian up here. And we can look at the fields that these guys see. So if we look at the upper block, so Z, X, we're going to see a piece on the x-axis of strength omega 1 over root 2. And if we look at this lower block, well, we're going to see a piece on the x-axis that looks like omega 1. Actually, I should draw this way smaller. Omega 1 over root 2. And then on the z-axis, we're going to get a piece that looks like 2 omega e bz. And so our effective field, assuming that is much greater than omega 1, we're going to get in this piece rotation, full rotation from the positive z-axis, assuming we start here, to the negative z-axis. In this piece, we're going to see rotations that don't do very much. So if we if we make some plots, so let's say psi at time 0 is equal to the 0 state, and the 0 state is, of course, so this is the plus 1 state, the 0 state, and the minus 1 state. We start with the 0 state, and we evolve under this Hamiltonian. And we plot the projections onto the 0, the 1, and the minus 1 space. Well, in the zero space, we're going to see oscillations like that. In the one space, that's the same one. And then the minus one block isn't going to be doing much. And we'll just see some, but the field is much bigger. We'll just see some fast oscillations near zero. And we can make those arbitrarily small by increasing the value of VZ. And this is what a Rabi experiment looks like with a spin one particle. So what we've done is we've taken our energy diagram. So we have omega z of s, and then we have a splitting up here given by 2 gamma e bz. We've said, okay, let's drive at this frequency. And what we saw is, what we see here is flopping between the zero state and the one state. And alternatively, we could drive at this frequency and you would see the same sort of thing, and this would become the minus one state. Great. So now let's consider what happens when you add a single carbon 13 atom to the Hamiltonian. And in this case, we're going to choose to align our static field along the principal axis so that it just comes in as a Z term. And we'll call it omega E. So this is gamma E VZ. We're also get a nuclear Zeeman term. And this comes in as gamma C VZ. We're going to get the hyperfine interaction, which is S dot A dot I. And now again, we want to move into the rotating frame, and I won't do it explicitly this time, but you follow the exact same steps. And what you'll see is that any term that has an xx in the first position is going to get averaged out. Same with any term that starts with an xy. But if there's an sz, then it'll commute and it'll stick around. So we'll get omega, let's take omega t. Z plus so since we've only introduced one nuclear term, we are still free to rotate what we mean by x and y. So we're just going to change our coordinate system so that this term goes to zero. And we won't lose any dynamics. It'll just make things easier to write down. And we'll also move on resonance with the zero field splitting. So this term will go to zero. And at this point, it might be helpful to look at this 6x6 matrix. So what are we going to get? We're going to get omega e here, so this S set is tensor identity, so we have the same sign here, but down here we have negative omega e, negative. Negative omega e. This nuclear term has an identity on the first component, so we'll see the same thing in each of these three blocks. So we'll have plus omega n over 2 minus omega n over 2. Finally, we'll get these two pieces. So these will still appear in the block diagonals because S is block diagonal. And we'll see a plus a z, z over 2 minus a 2 minus a 2 plus a z, z over 2. And the signs here and here are, of course, opposite because this z operator has a minus 1 in the lower right. And now we'll do the same thing for the zx. So we get azx over 2, azx over 2, and then we'll get maybe I'll just put zeros everywhere and write 1, 6, like that. And so in this picture, you very clearly see that the nuclear spin is seen one of three Hamiltonians, depending on the state of the electron. Right? This is the electron plus 1 manifold. This is the electron 0 manifold, and this is the electron minus 1 manifold. And so if the electron is in the plus 1 manifold, then the nuclear spin is going to evolve under this 2 by 2 Hamiltonian. Similarly, if the electron is in the 0 state, then the nucleus is going to evolve under this Hamiltonian. And so what we'll do is we'll write this down as plus 1 plus 1 tensor H plus 1 plus and we can look at the effective fields of these Hamiltonians. So in the electron plus 1 so in this case the omega e comes in as identity, so that is just going to add a global phase with respect to the other blocks, but we do get a sigma z term of strength azz, and a sigma z strength of strength omega n, and a sigma x term of strength az x. So we're going to get azx, azz, omega n, like that. And so this y-axis is getting in the way. Uh, will be rotating around this axis in the MS plus one manifold. So we'll call this unit vector n plus one hat, or just n one hat, and we'll call the length of the vector omega one. Like so. Similarly for the other two blocks, we're just going to get a piece here, strength omega n, n zero hat, omega zero equals omega n, and here, get rid of this axis. We get negative azx, negative azz. But we have a sign change with respect to these two terms. So down here, the omega n is still pointing up, right? So the effective field omega minus one great. So is that this is all making sense, right? Or
could you go over what you did with the omega n again, the last diagram? Yeah.
Here?
I mean
So it all stems from here. So we have identity tensor iz, which means that when you do the Kronecker product, you're going to end up with an iz here, an iz here, and an iz here. And so this omega n is positive, this one is negative. So that looks like a plus sigma z. This omega n is positive and this one is negative, so that looks like a plus sigma z. But in this term, we have an sz, which remember is 1, 0, minus 1. So when this iz goes into this top term, we have a positive here and a negative here, but a negative here and a positive here. So in this case, the az term is in the opposite direction than omega n. But in this case, the az is in the same direction as az. So when you add the vectors, the omega n is pointing up in all three cases, but the azz flips sign. Is that clear?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's clear, but it seems like you're drawing a vector with, instead of the arrow going like this, the arrow going like that. Do you know what I mean?
You want me to draw it up here? Okay.
Not worry
about it. I'm sure it's not very important. So now we want to ask the question, if this is our only control term, so we're only allowed to modulate the electron spin, can we also control the nuclear spin? And intuitively, at first thought, the answer might seem like it should be no. Like if you can't manipulate the nuclear spin directly, then you can't manipulate the entire system. But that's not true. You have full control over the entire six-dimensional space by only modulating the strength of this omega one term. And there were two papers published that proved this in 2007. One was by Navin Kaneja, and one was by David's student, Jonathan Hodges. And it's actually a not too hard of a result to see, so let's look at that now. So let's first suppose that we have a gate X that acts as follows. So it changes from 0 to plus 1 irrespective of the state on the nuclear spin, and plus 1 to 0, and we don't care what it does to the minus 1. And we'll set up a sequence like this. So we'll choose a bunch of random times. And between each time, we'll apply this gate that flips just the electron spin. And now, let's say our initial state is 0 psi. Well, in this period of time, since the electron is 0, the nuclear spin is going to evolve under the Hamiltonian H0. But then we flip the electron spin. So in this period of time, the nuclear spin is going to evolve under H1. And we keep flipping. And so the nuclear spin keeps seeing a different Hamiltonian. And each time it's processing around a different axis. So let's look at these dynamics on the plane that contains the vectors n0 and n1. So those two vectors. So we'll have n1, or actually n0. We'll have n1. So this is a projection of the Bloch sphere. So let's say this is the nuclear upstate, and down here is the nuclear downstate. So what we're going to do is any time we're evolving about the n0 Hamiltonian, we're going to travel with a right-handed rule on a disk perpendicular to that direction. And any time we're evolving under this Hamiltonian, we're going to be traveling on a circle oriented in this direction. So if we start here and we begin by evolving under H0, we're going to travel with the right-handed rule. So we're actually going to be on the back of the circle. We're going to go that way for some angle theta equals tau 1 omega naught. And then we're going to switch to H1, which means we're going to be evolving under this Hamiltonian. So we're on the back. So that should go up. Maybe I should be using different colors. Then we're going to wrap around, go somewhere else. Right. So our state is going to keep going on some zigzag depending on which Hamiltonian we're evolving under. And it's always going to be going either along a ring on this in this direction or in this direction. And if we started down here, well, we would just do the opposite thing. So start by going this way, around, go up here, go in, up, over and up, and up here. So, I mean, the specifics don't really matter, but what you've done is altogether, you've rotated from this point, oops, to that point, and from this point to that point. So you've affected some unitary on the nuclear spin. And by choosing these times carefully, you can affect any spin, any rotation you want on the nuclear spin. But all we've shown is that we can do a rotation on the nuclear spin. We haven't shown that we can do, for example, a C naught between the electron and the nuclear spin. But it's not too hard to see that we can also do that. So let's set up our timing. So is this clear? Yeah, okay. Set up our timing like this. So so if we start in this state, then we'll evolve under the sequence of Hamiltonians. But we start in this state, we'll evolve under the sequence of Hamiltonians. And we start with some superposition of these states, which is any state. Then we'll evolve under the usual superposition. So the trick is, now we've chosen these times tau k. Now here we're doing x's. In this middle pulse, we do nothing. So T1. Right, so here what we actually want to do is evolve by minus tau k if we're in the H1 manifold. But we can't evolve by minus time. So instead, we just do one full period minus tau k. And that's the same as going by minus tau k in the plus one manifold. And similarly here, we go, since this is a one, we go t1 minus tau 2. And that's the same as tau 2 if you're in the one manifold. And here we do t0 minus t1. Because so the idea is, now if we say u of ms tau is equal to e to the negative I tau h ms, so ms equals 1 or 0. Then if we track the evolution of this guy, what we're going to see is, we'll start from the end. U0. So notice that in the middle here, we've evolved for, so we're in the one manifold in both cases, and we evolved for a total time of T1. So we've done a full 2 pi rotation in the one manifold. So this guy is identity. And you look at the next two, you will have done the same thing. You will have done T0 plus TK minus 1 minus TK minus 1, which is also identity. You've done a full rotation there. And you look at the whole thing, they all cancel out, and you've done nothing. So you've done the identity operation on this state. On this state, we'll have the same thing, but all the ones are switched to zeros. So we'll have U1, T0 minus T1, U0. So you'll affect some unitary U1, which is a function of all the taus. And it's not obvious how to choose these taus, right? So say you have some desired unitary that you want to do. So how do you pick the taus so that you want it? Okay. If you feel like it, you could try to do the analytics. It'll get very difficult past k equal to 2 or 3. So what, for example, you can do is you set up a functional that takes you from rk to the unitaries given by the absolute value of the trace of u desired. Oh, no, it takes you to the real numbers. So now you just do a numerical optimization where you keep changing the value of tau and you try to maximize this function. Because this function is equal to 2 if and only if u desired is equal to u1. So it's not very elegant, but it works.
Go back to the original Hamiltonians, and you'll see that, of course, they're not along the same axis, and so therefore they don't commute. And by oscillating between them, what you're looking at is the non-commutivity of those two. And so if you take all nested combinations of those two Hamiltonians, and look at the group that forms, and if it's the full space, then you have universal control. And then it's some small exercise to say, hey, can I find a sequence? And of course, there's an infinite number of them, so that's a painful process. But to demonstrate that you have universal control over a space, that's an easy process, since all you need to do is to look at the algebra generated by all the possible nested commutators.
And if you wanted to prove, for example, that you have universal control when you have one electron and many nuclei, Like, you'll get a headache if you try to do it this way. You definitely want to start taking commutators and see that you generate the full Lie algebra. But
I think I missed the connection between the Hamiltonian and that operation. So in that Hamiltonian, the controlling the electrons of the
line. Yeah.
But then is that X acting on the electron spin?
That X is acting on the full space. I just assumed that, let's suppose you can do that operation, which we can.
With that?
Yes. I mean, you would. It might take a little bit of work to see that you can do it, but